On this episode of The Lead, we're going nuclear. We're going to talk about a late-breaking clinical trial that just came out today and is simultaneously published in Heart Rhythm Journal. It's called Early Feasibility. It's a long title, Early Feasibility of Catheter-Free Radioablation with Proton Beams. And proton is the key word. First author is Dr. Siantis. Senior author is Dr. Packer out of Mayo Clinic. And I'm lucky today to have our two discussants, Dr. Karim Benali from Saint-Étienne and Bordeaux, and Dr. Chris Kowalewski in Nuremberg, Germany. International panel. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for discussing this with me today.
Thank you, Mike.
So, Karim, protons, photons. I know you have a background in STAR, but for our listeners, give us an idea of what we're talking about here.
So, first of all, the clinical scenario of refractory ventricular arrhythmias is not a so rare scenario in clinical practice, but it's a highly complex one to manage. And even if catheter ablation has become a really efficient therapy to treat this population of patients, some of them remain in therapeutic impasse, and it's really negative in terms of quality of life for this population, as well as for outcomes. During the last years, cardiac radioablation, so stereotactic cardiac radiotherapy, has emerged as a really promising and interesting alternative bailout strategy in this population.
Sure.
It showed to be really efficient to reduce the burden of ventricular arrhythmia, as well as eliminating the ventricular arrhythmias completely in some patients. However, there are some limitations in the implementation of this technique, and the main one is the risk of collateral damages, of side effects due to the irradiation of surrounding organs, extracardiac organs, as well as cardiac structures. And this risk is the main risk when implementing this therapy. Every physician implementing cardiac radioablation knows that the treatment planning is really complex due to this ratio between efficacy and safety for the collateral organs. And the fact is that proton beam therapy instead of photon beam therapy, that is the classic energy used currently for cardiac radioablation. So proton beam can give the ability to control the energy deposition in the tissue. It means that due to a specific property of proton compared to photon, we have the ability to master the where the energy will be deposited in depth, and we avoid a lot of irradiation at the entrance site and exit site of the radiation beam. And this is the main advantage of the technique that the authors will
investigate. So it's dumping all of its energy right as it stops at the end of its path.
Exactly.
This is the Bragg peak that they refer to.
Completely.
Yeah. I see.
This is this Bragg peak effect.
And so what are they? They're just, this study is using this modality, the same that we would do in our photon.
Exactly. So the other element of the treatment planning remains almost the same, but they use this proton and this Bragg peak effect to control the radiation of surrounding structure and to decrease the radiation dose received at the entrance site and exit site. But this is the first feasibility study with proton. This is the first trial using this energy to try to improve the safety profile of the technique.
I see. Chris, tell us about the details of the trial. And I mean, seven patients isn't a lot, but tell us what they found and how they did it.
That is true. Let's take a bit of a dive. So this was a prospective, non-randomized clinical trial with an IDE by the FDA. Inclusion criteria were an LVEF below 50, an implanted ICD, prior catheter ablation, failure of antiarrhythmic drugs, and then re-catheter ablation was inappropriate due to risk or futility. So for all of these patients, they had an ECG and an LGE, and that's what they based their targeting on. Sometimes they also used the maps from the first procedure to find where they wanted to go. The idea was to be concise, so to only go for the exit and maybe adjacent scar, not too much area. And they only targeted the clinical VT, not several, and tried to go for a dose of like 30 gray in the target area.
30 gray.
30 gray was the target dose.
And for photons, to put it in perspective, 25 gray usually?
Yeah.
Okay.
So follow-up evaluations were done at 2 weeks, 3, 6, 12, and 24 months. There was remote monitoring to control these patients. And they had oral anticoagulation for 3 months after the radioablation, essentially. So we had 7 patients. 4 of them were non-ischemic, 2 were mixed, and 1 was ischemic cardiomyopathy. Their median LVEF was 26%, so pretty sick patients in general. 5 patients already had more than 2 ablations before. So they reached their goal in terms of radiation. They got 38 gray into the target area.
Okay.
And only 4% of the non-targeted myocardium received doses above 20 gray. So
that's what Kareem was referring to, that most of the energy is concentrated right at their target site.
Yeah, they were pretty able to get a concise area and not much around it.
Mm-hmm.
So during the follow-up of 514 days, 6 out of 7 patients experienced at least 1 VT event. And however, it became less frequent in 5 of 6 of these patients. So I think the benefit we're talking about is going from 7.3 per patient month VT events. So they had roughly seven VTs per month before, down to 1.5 per month during the whole follow-up period.
So not a cure, but a reduction.
Yes. That's
the VT events. Are these shocks or just anything that was recorded?
So the VT events were sustained VT that was terminated by either ATP in 82% or then shocks.
I see.
In the remaining 12. So 2 patients died, 2 had a transplant, and 3 are still alive. But that's what is to expect with such a sick patient cohort, I guess. And one concern could be that the LVEF goes down after radioablation, but it only went down 4% in these patients. So there was not too much damage to the overall function. And there was no near or long time probable or definitive adverse event due to the therapy, which is really good.
Kareem, what do you think of this data? I mean, do you think it's, I know it's a feasibility study, but do you feel like this is the path now? Should we start using this modality instead of photons?
Yeah. I think we have to commend Scientist, the main author, and all the team for this great achievement, for this feasibility trial that is always difficult to realize.
Sure.
But still, there are many limitations in the present study. The main one, as you said, is the very limited number of patients. So 7 patients, it's really difficult to draw any firm conclusion about the full spectrum of patients that you could be able to treat with this therapy. The second one is, so it's mainly a safety concern trial. And the thing is that it's 2 years of follow-up, so it's really good for first in human, but still regarding a side effect of radiation therapy, it's usually too short to be sure that you don't have like midterm or very long-term side effect. That is the main concern with this therapy. The other important element is that this infrastructure to be able to do proton beam therapy is much more specialized and complex than for photon beam therapy. That is already a niche therapy in our field, as we were discussing before. And maybe proton beam could be a really interesting technical alternative, but maybe not replace tomorrow the photon beam therapy.
But talk to me a little bit about that. How common is a proton center? I mean, in France, for instance, how many, or is it at your hospital?
Yeah, no, in my hospital, not. We perform a lot, it's relative, but photon therapy for refractory ventricular arrhythmia, we treat about 5 to 10 patients a year. It's not a big population.
Sure.
And we have this photon beam infrastructure, but regarding proton beam, if we would to use it, we have to refer the patient in Paris or in other centers that are tertiary centers, but with much more complex infrastructure. So in the US, maybe it's more common now, but in France, I think it's limited, the access to this proton beam
What about devices. In Germany, Chris? Do you have a proton
center? We don't have a proton beam in our center, and it's quite limited access in general. I mean, proton beams have the advantage of delivering energy right where you want it, but then this advantage seems to be quite marginal for many cancer patients, and that's why there's not many around, plus the extra cost of investing in such a proton beam seems to be too much for many centers.
It's a costly endeavor for sure. These patients, they presumably all had devices, and I know that protons put a different risk to the device itself. Was that even mentioned in the paper?
Yeah. Okay. So the devices were located more than 3 centimeters away from the target zone, and the devices were checked before the procedure, after the procedure, and during follow-up. And none of the devices or leads showed anything suspicious or had any malfunction. So one of the main advantages is that by really being concise, you can also limit the area where you have effects. And if 3 centimeters apparently is enough to protect these devices and leads. So that is one advantage to be able to spare those, I think.
The neutrons that are generated from this therapy, I think, are just random. So it can be 8 feet away or 2 inches away, but I think it's very, it's like getting struck by lightning to hurt a microprocessor. We've not seen it in patients getting treated for cancer, but it's a great mystery of what protons will sometimes do to devices. So do you think this is analogous to cryo versus radio frequency, Kareem, at protons? Do you think this is going to supplant the photon therapy?
I don't think so, at least yet, because as we said, there are many limitations in this current trial. That is a feasibility one. And the neutron question is really important because, as you said, in the photon-based therapy, we don't face this phenomena, but it's much more mysterious in the proton therapy, and 7 patients followed during 2 years. I think, in my opinion, it's too short and a limited sample size to be sure that the device do not have malfunction during the follow-up, because as we are saying, almost all these patients have devices, and some of them are dependent, some of them have like a very complex device. And the thing is that 7 patients is too limited now for drawing conclusion. And also, the field would need larger studies and maybe comparison studies between like photon and proton to be able really to conclude on the improvement of the safety profile. We need to keep this efficacy, because here, as Chris said, there is 6 patients with recurrences on 7. It's more than usually described in photon beam therapy, even if there are a lot of recurrence with photon beam. But we need much more data regarding keeping the same efficacy profile and improving the safety before, I think, imagining a transition to this therapy.
Chris, we've been doing this for a long time. The original New England Journal paper has come out many years ago. So I'm worried about these small series. When do you think we're going to have an answer if this really works? Or is this good enough? Are we only going to use it for our Hail Mary sort of cases?
I think the Hail Mary cases are a good place to begin.
Okay.
And I think this feasibility study is great because it already shows, okay, this works. We get a lot of dose into the targeted area. I think it would be really nice to see a big study just to see the effects. And the best would be, as Grimm said, with a control arm with photon therapy, just to be able to compare these two. It's very difficult to match the groups, I think, in this cohort. But yeah, it would be nice to see more of this. Yeah.
Wonderful. We've been talking about the feasibility of protons for catheter-free radio ablation. It's published in Heart Rhythm. It's a late breaker here at HRS. Dr. Kareem Benali, Dr. Chris Kowalewski, thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.